Today's program was brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com.
This is Sherry Bayer from All in the Industry. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Native on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Brianna Kurtz. Each week, this show features a U.S. or international location and uses food and drink as a gateway to explore and celebrate the cuisine and culture of a place. This week, we are talking about one of nature's best culinary gifts and an important part of Southern food heritage, oysters. And to help me learn more about the subject, I am joined by Sean O'Connell. So, hi, Sean. Thanks for joining us on Heritage Radio.
Good morning. Thank you.
So let's start off by telling me a little bit about yourself and how you got so excited about oysters.
Sure. We have a beautiful restaurant called the Hangout Restaurant down in Gulf Shores, Alabama, and another restaurant nearby called the Gulf. We serve oysters at both the locations, and a few years ago, the restaurants started doing something with other restaurants in the community, which was an oyster cook-off. And through doing that, we discovered just the variety of ways that you can enjoy oysters and the amount of recipes that are out there and the amount of love and the passion for oysters. During that time, we also started an event division and started a music festival called the Hangout Music Festival, which has now gone on to be one of the biggest and best in the world. And we bring in 100 different bands, and that happens in May. And so we really started learning a lot about how to produce events at this incredible location. So we really upped the game last year and made the Oyster Cook-Off a national event. So in addition to having chefs who are competing, preparing recipes for with oysters, we also are showcasing some of the best farmed oysters from around North America. And that's one of the things that we're most passionate about is how much the boutique craft oyster industry has really taken off here in the United States.
And I can't wait to talk more about Hangout Music Fest, but I do want to just dive in a little bit more to the oysters. So as you mentioned, it is a really exciting time. Why do you think that is for, like, why right now is it becoming, there's more momentum around oysters?
I think you're seeing, again, chefs, as we have this culinary movement, which you guys know so much about. So many chefs. We have 20 James Beard nominees and winners who are consistently on their menus at their restaurants serving oysters. I think they're getting bolder in terms of how to showcase oysters as an ingredient. Then the second part is 15 years ago when we had an oyster, we were eating an oyster that naturally grew on the bed of the ocean or a riverbed or an estuary. That's not necessarily true anymore. What we're seeing with the oyster farming, which is generally oysters that are hung from baskets in shallow water, they grow differently. And because you can pick locations of where they grow, that has a big, big impact on their taste. So we're really seeing a boom, much like a wine connoisseur or a craft beer connoisseur. You can taste the difference between different oysters from different areas, even if they're the same species. It's stunning, really stunning the impact that oyster farming is having on the industry.
Well, it sounds like there's a lot of good people behind why oysters are having such a big moment. So maybe as someone who I imagine spends a lot of time with oyster farmers or on oyster farms yourself, maybe you can tell us a little bit about what a normal day is like on an oyster farm for people who just haven't had that experience.
It's funny, I got to go to my first one just a little while ago, and it was an amazing experience.
Where was it?
So it was in on the west side of Mobile Bay, mm-hmm. And the setting was me driving down a road that was maybe 5 miles of just absolute nothing, and I turn into this location and am absolutely blown away by the setting. I was looking across a smaller bay, maybe 3 miles in depth. That bay has, I would say 50% of it is surrounded by national refuge. So on a rainy day or a storm, you have water runoff that's going to run through woods and marsh and really take any toxins that may be out of it and give that fresh water a taste. That dumps into this small bay, and maybe 3 miles wide. That's no more than 6 or 7 feet deep at any one point. And I love the water. We work on the water. I love fishing. I've never seen an area so abundant with sea life. I mean, everywhere you looked, fish were jumping out of the water, shrimp were dancing on top of the water. And this was the Point of Pine oyster farm. And so right there on this incredible setting, there's just, it's really unassuming. There's a small pier coming off the land, and then you see these posts that go out almost as if someone had built a fence and at some point the water kind of took it over. And these posts maybe go out 40 or 50 feet. And if you can imagine two sets of posts parallel to each other going out 40 feet into the water, those posts have cables attached to them. And so you have these two lines going across. And what the oyster farmers are doing, and this is an Australian practice, is they're actually hanging the oysters in baskets. And so those baskets, they're not sitting on the bottom of the water. The oyster farmer has the ability to change the height of the line, if that makes sense, so they can change how deep it sits in the water. And it does a few things that are very interesting and make a big difference here. So one, this location, obviously, an oyster is going to taste differently than an oyster from Island Creek in New England or one of the Rappahannock River. It's going to have its own unique flavor. And with that said, the other part that makes it interesting is those oysters, while they're in that basket, they're constantly getting motion. And why that's important is an oyster, the meat of an oyster, generally grows longer than the shell. So in its natural habitat, that meat is going to grow longer, and that's going to make a flatter oyster. And so most of the oysters that we've had at restaurants are probably an oyster off a seabed. Here, what happens is because there's the waves and the action of the current, the meat is constantly getting clipped. It's a really fragile, tender meat. It's getting clipped as it grows by the tip of the shell. And so nature has its funny ways. And so the creature reacts by growing thicker. So growing up into the shell, therefore creating a much more round oyster shell and a meatier shell. So often you see farmed oysters that are just plumper. And it's because instead of the meat actually growing long, it's had to adapt and grow thicker, if you will. So the setting of the water, the action of the waves and the current really are two really distinct things that make farmed oysters different.
Very interesting. I didn't know some of those details. And what about your personal favorites? So as far as oysters are concerned, I'm assuming that you have a very specific affection for the local oysters in Alabama, of course. But what about other favorite oysters that you like from around the world? Like, and why do you like these oysters maybe more than others?
Well, that's a great question, and that goes is a big part of what we're setting out to do. So, in addition to throwing this event where you and I can go and taste all these raw oysters, we've actually brought in a panel of 16 experts. These are food writers. These are some of the best chefs all around the country who actually aren't doing anything with the general public. They're actually behind the scenes working with us on creating a tasting guide and a 100-point rating system, very similar and inspired by Wine Spectator. So what you just asked me is something that I look for all the time. So I love wine. I love craft beer. I can't remember what I had at the last restaurant. You know, and I generally look to when I go to a grocery store, I look through the Wine Spectator ratings to really understand whether that's a wine I'd want to purchase. Oysters don't have that. We have so many varieties of of oysters now that we all need this. We need a little hand-holding on what the food palate tastes like. And mm-hmm. so with all that said, I mean, there are a few, I think, getting turned on to Hog Island, Sweetwaters.
Oh, yeah, those are really popular up here.
That's the first time that I really, I think, knew I was tasting oyster that just wasn't generic.
Something special.
And this point of pine oyster, the Gulf in particular doesn't get the recognition it deserves. Mm-hmm. And this is, I think, much more than me just, waving the hometown flag. When I go to New York City and go to Grand Central, which I try to go to every time I go to New York City, one of the best oyster houses at the Grand Central Terminal, there's not a Gulf oyster on the menu. And that is decades of an assumption that the Gulf doesn't raise good oysters. Most of the growth in the Gulf oysters is based on these farmed oysters. So because of that, there's some really exquisite taste, and I think you're going to see those really catch on. Murder Point is probably the biggest brand name, mm-hmm. and much like a good craft beer, a good wine, I think that also comes down to just as it's a good name. There's a story behind it. There's a location behind it. This whole renaissance with these oysters, there's much more than just entrepreneurs behind it. Auburn University, which we all know probably more for their football team than anything else, started a shellfish laboratory. And Bill over there has been an incredible dynamic player in really being a catalyst for oyster farming. So a lot of these oyster farms have actually come out of Auburn graduate students going around all over the Gulf Coast, Texas, Florida, you name it, and researching places that where oysters are going to grow well, where they're going to grow fast, they're going to grow healthy, that they have unique properties, unique tastes. There's a lot of science behind it, which is really exciting. At the end of the day, the salinity of an oyster is something that's really important to me. It obviously can't be too salty, and then they each have their own flavor. I mean, there are oysters that feel smoky. There's oysters that feel almost have a seafood flavor. That's not true of all oysters. So it's a lot of sampling, and I think we really went all out on looking at a variety of oysters that span a lot of different tastes. So there's an author named Erin Murray who grew up on an oyster farm and has written extensively about oysters, and she curated these oysters, farmed oysters, with us this year.
Interesting. Well, let's unpack some of what you said. You just put a lot out there. Besides just being delicious and people liking to eat them, from the consumer side, why should people really care about oysters?
Well, if you think of its impact just on an environmental scale, mm-hmm. this is a food that takes very little resources to grow. It takes very little space. We talk about the things that we're putting on our water lines, or on our waterways that are maybe controversial. When someone wants to build a power station or an oil well off the coast, you'll get a lot of uproar because people are concerned that it's going to impact their sight lines or it's going to injure birds. For oyster farming, there's very little impact. When you look out at any of these oyster farms, you almost don't notice. It doesn't change the landscape whatsoever. And in fact, probably the biggest part about oysters that is a benefit. I know this is not a reason any of us are going to go to the restaurant, but oysters are cleaning water, and that's a pretty important fact. If our oyster business in the United States is healthy, that means that our waters are clean, and that's a great, great thing.
Very interesting. All right. We've got a lot more to talk about, but let's take a quick break. Stay with us. When we come back, we'll be learning more about oysters and Hangout Music Fest with Sean O'Connell.
Music. Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years. So it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
All right, we are back. I'm Brianna Kurtz, and you're listening to Native on Heritage Radio. And today I am talking to Sean O'Connell about Southern culture and oysters. So, Sean, I want to pick up actually right where we left off. You mentioned one of the many reasons people should care about oysters is the environment. So really quickly, I just want to touch on what happened in the Gulf area a couple of years ago with the big Gulf oil spill there. And just maybe like what you've heard from your local oyster farmers, from your local fishing community, like where are we today? What impact has it had? What's your experience?
Yeah, it's totally rebounded. That was definitely a scary time. Where we are in Gulf Shores was less impacted environmentally. It was impacted in the biggest way economically. When that was happening, I always equate it to, it was like one of those disaster movies, you know, where the asteroid's out there in space hurling towards Earth. The, you know, oil spill was miles and miles away, but people were canceling their vacations. And if you look at that area in the summer, you're looking at an area that is absolutely booming, has some of the most exquisite beaches in the world. And so if tourism goes away, the whole town crashes. Every single business there is there supporting the tourist. So it was definitely a very scary time. The oyster business in the oyster farming has completely rebounded. You know, that you walk up and down the beach, you don't see any sign that there was an oil spill. The reaction to the oil spill and the cleanup efforts were pretty stunning, and I think now everybody is really past the wow, that was painful. If anything, the amount of energy marketing that went into bringing back that area, mm-hmm. It's astounding. The Gulf Shores, the Orange Beach area, are booming well beyond what we saw before the oil spill. I think a lot of people honestly ended up discovering those beaches. We all knew New Orleans, we all knew Louisiana, but I think the idea that there's these beautiful sugar white sandy beaches in Gulf Shores, I think it was a secret.
Very interesting. It's funny that you compared it to like a end of the world like event, because I think it's called like Deep Water Horizon. I think I'm getting that right. And it just sounds like an apocalyptic title to like a movie or something. It's very scary. But as far as like the long-term effects, like and you mentioned the academic research going into oysters in the first half of the show, are people still keeping track of these things?
Yeah, they are. And the oysters and the seafood are absolutely great to eat. They're not showing any signs of oil in that. And I think that's, you know, going back to what we talked about, you know, oysters, you know, filter 20 to 50 gallons of seawater per day. Hmm. Which is pretty outstanding. And when you eat an oyster, you're eating an oyster that is 1 year old, right? So that's the other part. When we go and we put oysters into the water, we're harvesting them that next fall at their peak time. So you're not eating an oyster that was from the oil spill. You're eating an oyster that's from now.
All right. Well, let's switch gears a little bit. I want to talk about parties and oysters and all these fun things. I think it's really interesting how oysters are eaten differently in different places. I grew up in Charleston, South Carolina, so we love a good oyster roast. Boone Hall is probably one of the biggest and most well-known. People from all over the country really come for that time of year, and there's beers and bands and oysters, and it's a great time for celebration. So why do you think that oysters go so well with this like environment?
You know, you get one hand for your drink and one hand for the oyster. I think that is a big part of it. It's small bites. You know, you get down and sit down and eat a big steak, you know, dinner with a few courses. You're at the table. This is, you know, very similar to eating crawfish or anything else, where it's done casually. You can have an oyster. You can then engage in conversation. And for our event, it's an incredibly laid-back event. I mean, this is one where you have 50, 60 different chef tents that you're bouncing around to. You're running into people who are like, oh my gosh, you have to try this. It's really exciting. And, you know, I got into this business because I've been in the music business for 25 years. And what I've loved about the music business is I've been in the business where people are so passionate about what they do. Why I'm hooked on the Oyster Cook-Off and in the culinary world in general, it's very similar. Everybody participating is so passionate about what they do, and the attendees, they're absolutely the same way. I don't know if that answers your question, but the other part I will tell you about what makes oysters so enjoyable in that setting is when I go to other food and wine shows, I have found them to be honestly quite pretentious. I think that they have a very high ticket price. I think that the things that are prepared on stage are things that I can never make in my own home. The difference between those type of events and what we're doing is you go in the parking lot and you may see some really nice cars, but there isn't anybody that's dressing up for the event. Everybody's in their sweatshirt and wearing whatever college is, that they're proud of, and got their plaid shirt on, their jeans. And there's no sense of being pretentious. I mean, people are just there because they're passionate about oysters. They like the event. It's a very, very social setting, and it's the things that happen in between the eating that I think make this event so exciting. And that again is because you got a cold beer or a Bloody Mary in one hand, and you're able to go and taste an oyster in the other.
Perfect. Well, we've been kind of been skirting around this event, so I want to make it a lot more clear. Tell me exactly what Hangout Music Fest is, when it is, where it is, what bands are playing, all the good stuff.
Okay, so separately, so the cook-off is happening here on November 6th and 7th at Gulf Shores. And that event is you can go in and buy a book of food tickets and go around the different booths and taste these different oysters. You can go sample the North American raw oysters. You can also go and sample things from Ann Burrell, from Food Network, and a ton of fantastic celebrities. The music festival is very different. The music festival is much larger in scale, but as music festivals go, it's probably more intimate than some of the bigger ones you've heard about. It all happens on the beach. We have seven different stages. We pride ourselves that this music festival, which last year featured the Foo Fighters and Zac Brown and Skrillex and 90 just absolutely amazing bands, this festival, which is one Polestar Festival of the Year, everybody's treated like a VIP. You're literally watching your favorite bands with your toes in the sand, the Gulf of Mexico lapping, at your feet. It's really easy. One of the unique things about where we do the event, in Gulf Shores and Orange Beach, there are condos that can accommodate every single person that comes to the event. Half our audience can literally walk from their condo and come to the event. So your average morning at our festival, we call it the Easy Festival. You wake up, you make a cup of coffee in your kitchen, you walk out to your balcony, you look at this incredible view, you can maybe go for a swim around 11 o'clock, 11 a.m. It's beach time. And you literally just grab your flip-flops and you head down to the music festival, and you're able to enjoy literally the best and biggest bands in the world in this setting. So that's really unique. Anytime you're at the beach, people, they're laid back, they treat each other nice. It makes it really special. So that happens always the weekend before Memorial Day. This year, it's May 19, 20, 21, and 22. And Gulf Shores, if you haven't been, it's really easy to get to. It's only 40 minutes from the Pensacola, Florida airport. So we're right there, a couple miles from the Florida border. It's wonderful. I got the best job in the world.
Well, I am looking right now at hangoutmusicfest.com, and it looks exactly like you're describing. It kind of looks like if you've ever watched the World Cup, where they have the big screen on Copacabana Beach and like everyone's watching. Like, you're literally on the beach and there's a stage and everyone looks like they're having a good time. I mean, it looks amazing.
It is. Thank you for that. It really is. You can check out photos and videos at hangoutmusicfest.com.
Yeah. All right. Well, before we go, we've mentioned a couple times the restaurants and all the chefs participating in these events. So tell me just maybe some of maybe two, maybe three of your favorite ways to eat oysters, some of your favorite recipes.
Oh, I'm not going to give you that. But I first and foremost, I'm a purist. I love raw oysters.
So no, like, oyster po' boys, no, like, you know, oysters Rockefeller, nothing like that?
I do like Rockefellers, and I always tend to that ends up being my favorite at the event. There's always somebody who surprises me. We have a few different awards for the competing restaurants, and there's a People's Choice Award. We have a barbecue society, a partnership with the Kansas City Barbecue Society, where they've gone and we've actually worked on an oyster judging society with them. So we have these very detail-oriented judges that come in. But we also have now a bunch of these James Beard chefs that have a chef's choice. So what is very funny, of course, is that often the people's choice and my choice ends up being something delicious with lots of cheese and bacon on top. But we also this year also want to honor some of the chefs who maybe aren't going, you know, for Sean O'Connell's lowest common denominator. If you have cheese and bacon, anything, I love it. But we're also really trying to promote some of the chefs who are taking some risks and rewarding them for the quality ingredients they are using. And it's very exciting.
Awesome. Well, Sean, thank you so much for joining us today and talking all about Hangout Music Fest and Southern food culture. Where can people find out more besides hangoutmusicfest.com if they want to find out more about you and the restaurants and everything?
So for the oyster cook-off, you would go to hangoutcookoff.com, and you can buy tickets there and come on down and join us. Again, that happens next week, November 7th, and we have a big craft beer component. So on Friday night, for a $48 ticket, you can come see one of the best bands in the South, the Black Jacket Symphony, and taste an incredible amount of craft brews, a lot from Alabama, so they haven't had a chance to explore that. So we're really excited about that. And then for the Music Fest, it's hangoutmusicfest.com. And then finally, you can look at the Hangout restaurant, thehangout.com.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much again. That is all for Native this week. Thanks to our sponsor, Fairway Markets. And if you want to catch all of our episodes, you can always find them on Heritage Radio's website or on iTunes. Otherwise, we've got a couple great episodes left this season. Be sure to tune in live right here every Thursday morning at 11 a.m.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.